Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today's going to be kind of an all-around-the-world episode. We've got news in Fremont, Austin, Berlin, Shanghai, then we have some product updates, and a couple other stories to go through as well. Strong start to the week for Tesla stock, with the Nasdaq bouncing back today as well. The Nasdaq finished up 3%, Tesla finished up 6.4% to $718.43. Alright, so we'll start off with some quick news here in Fremont. This is just continuing again our conversation about the temporary production shutdown that Tesla had last week. Tasmanian on Saturday reported that, quote, Tasmanian received photos taken in and near the factory, which show that at the moment, activity is already at a high level. The parking lots for new cars are full, and new vehicles are loaded and shipped to delivery centers and ports. The employee parking lot is also completely filled with cars, which confirms the fact that the factory is operating the same as before the two-day shutdown, end quote. While I'm not sure I'd go as far as saying that this is proof that things are exactly the same as before the shutdown, there are good signs here, and this would also be supported by a tweet from one of our listeners last week that also showed the factory parking lot being basically 100% full as early as Thursday, so thanks David for passing that along. Next, let's move over to Austin. A few different pieces of interesting information here, the first of which comes from the Austin Business Journal, which has reported that Tesla has applied to have Giga Texas designated as a foreign trade zone. This could offer Tesla some tax benefits, though the Austin Business Journal estimates that that would only be about $270,000 per year. On the scale of Giga Texas, that's really not all that much. Of course, every dollar matters, so if you can get it, go ahead and get it, but I think there may be a larger benefit here from trade.gov. They say that foreign trade zones are designated sites licensed by the Foreign Trade Zone Board, at which special customs procedures may be used. So some of those relate to duty. But under benefits of the frequently asked questions section, they also note logistical benefits, saying, quote, companies using FTZ procedures may have access to streamlined customs procedures, for example, weekly entry or direct delivery, end quote. I found a little bit more information on those examples from norvenco.com. They say that direct delivery allows for immediate movement off the pier upon vessel arrival, which, quote, greatly reduces clearance delays, including lengthy customs exams, end quote. For weekly entry, they say, quote, another foreign trade zone provision sanctions weekly advanced approval for U.S. Customs release of merchandise into U.S. commerce from the warehouse. Known as weekly estimated entry, this process allows for immediate availability of product for order fulfillment and shipment upon arrival at an FTZ warehouse, end quote. Put together, they say from port to domestic shipment, this can save as much as 2 days relative to normal customs processes. That 2 days means lower inventory costs, quicker turnaround times if there are delays, a lot of really good benefits to cutting that out, and I think that would be much more significant than any, you know, $270,000 a year saved in taxes. So maybe a bit more impactful than it seems at first blush, and we'll definitely keep an eye out for any updates on that status. The other piece of news on Austin, this comes from Joe Tagmeyer, who is one of the people doing drone flyovers, tracking the progress of Giga Texas. He does a great job of providing context, and since we're talking Texas, y'all know I'm a fan of that. And in one of his updates last week, he relayed that he had spoken with a bunch of contractors. They had recently had a call with Elon Musk, and one of the topics was the need to accelerate construction due to the delays that were caused by weather previously. So Musk was asking for more instances of 24/7 operations to get back on schedule. Probably not too surprising there. And then they also mentioned that there have been many changes, over a dozen changes now from the original design to where they're at now, and even more are in progress at this time. Not that we need any more examples of this, but I think that just highlights how quickly Tesla is moving. Not only are they building out these factories on unprecedented timelines, they are also iterating while that process unfolds. That's not to say that other projects like this wouldn't have changes to the original plan. Anything of this scale probably would. But from the context of the conversation, just seems like with Tesla, it's happening a bit more and a bit faster. All right, next up, let's move on to China. We've got some news on Giga Shanghai reported by a few different sources. We'll look here at Tesla Mania on Twitter, who writes that Shanghai is authorizing a new 460,000 square meter piece of land for, quote, new energy vehicles, whole vehicle manufacturing near Giga Shanghai. Quote, people familiar with the matter say it is highly likely that Tesla will be acquiring the usage right of this land, end quote. So 460,000 square meters, that's about 114 acres. Giga Shanghai right now is about 214 acres, so this would be about a 53% increase in land space if this is for Tesla. The other important point there is this is for whole vehicle manufacturing. So again, if this were for Tesla, this wouldn't just be for batteries, this would be for full vehicle production. So the obvious next question is, okay, is this potentially the land for a cheaper $25,000 price range type of vehicle from Tesla? If it were, maybe that'll start to give us some hints on timeline for a newer, cheaper model, because of course we've seen now with phase one for Model 3, phase two for Model Y, it's taken Tesla about a year in China to go from breaking ground to starting production on that land. If I see any more updates on that, I'll be sure to pass those along. Next, let's move over to Germany. Here we've got a bit of news that TeslaMag.de has reported on of Tesla collaborating in some battery research with a German university. The project is with the University of Bayreuth. It will focus on glass separators for lithium-ion batteries and actually starts today. So a glass separator or a solid separator is often one of the components that makes up a battery that's referred to as solid state. If you remember back to our discussion around QuantumScape, they're using a ceramic separator. So there's always tons and tons of research going on in this space. I don't think too surprising to see Tesla involved in that at a research stage. And as far as Tesla's involvement, this doesn't seem to be as intensive as the Dalhousie University partnership with Jeff Dahn. The University of Bayreuth calls Tesla an industrial partner here, saying that, quote, "To ensure that the glass membranes developed in Bayreuth actually meet the requirements placed on them, they are tested in the laboratories of the industrial partners, Varta and Tesla," end quote. Two other companies, Fuller Glass Technology and Vitrolan Glass Textile, so four companies in total, are also involved. So this may be more of a case of Tesla being involved to just help provide resources, provide equipment for testing, rather than more of the Dalhousie type of situation where Tesla's involved in more of the direction of the research. All right, I think that wraps up the around the world news. Let's now move into a couple of product updates. The first here on full self-driving. Of course, Elon has talked about a subscription coming soon for a long time. Elon today provided an update on that on Twitter in response to Holmars asking about the timeline, and he said Q2 for sure. Somehow we're already in the last month of Q1, so this would be sometime in the next 4 months. As Elon has said in the past, he again added, quote, "Note, buying full self-driving will still be a better long-term deal than subscription," end quote. I think the big reason Elon adds that is to not hurt sales of the full self-driving option today. If people think a subscription is coming and it's going to be the same price or cheaper, they'll just wait. I do think what Elon says is true. However, I also expect that over time, Tesla will probably eliminate the option to buy it outright and move to sales being fully subscription-based. That solves the problem of owners complaining that they can't transfer their full self-driving option, and it solves Tesla's problem of selling long-term access to software for far less money than they think it's actually worth. The only reason to do that is to get that capital up front, use it to grow your business, but Tesla has become quite a bit less capital constrained over the last year, so the incentive to do that has become smaller. I would also imagine that played a role in Tesla's decisions to raise the amount of capital that they have. One of the problems I can foresee with that subscription model is that it might be a little bit trickier for Tesla to change the prices as they have with the full self-driving option in the past. Raising the price on the option, that really only impacts new customers, but if you try to raise the price on the subscription, that could potentially impact everyone, unless people kind of get grandfathered into their original payment price, but then you have the same problem that you had with the original option. But a customer is not going to like if they have to pay $200 one month and then, oh, all of a sudden, next month it's $250 or $300. Obviously, there's precedent with other subscription services increasing their prices slowly over time, but full self-driving is not Netflix. It's not going to be a couple dollars more expensive every year. The value should increase pretty significantly, pretty sharply. So I think that's going to be a bit of a challenge. It'll be interesting to see how Tesla manages that. I think longer term, they can go to a per-use type of model. Obviously, the Tesla network would be set up in that way at least. And if we look at the other areas of Tesla's business, like supercharging, for example, you're not paying a monthly subscription fee for supercharging. You just pay for the amount of charging you use. So I think that makes a lot of sense. But then, you know, again, from Tesla's perspective, do you really want someone to have access to these features and just barely ever use them? Because in a case like that, Tesla's got a really valuable asset sitting there, not really generating any money. So considering that, I don't know, maybe per unit of time, it does actually make a little bit more sense from a personal use perspective. I'll be curious to hear people's thoughts on that in the comments, so let me know. But anyway, moving on here, we do have another product update. This again from the Kilowatts on Twitter. They've been keeping a close eye for any refresh Model S and X vehicles, as we talked about last week. And they have finally spotted one that does have a yoke steering wheel. Over the last couple of weeks, these refresh vehicles have been spotted, but I believe this is the first time that we've seen the yoke beyond just the renders in the design studio. All right, last few things for today, the first of which is we now finally have a date for the rescheduled appearance of Ron Barron on CNBC. You may remember a week or two ago, this had been scheduled, didn't end up happening, and we hadn't really heard anything until now. So it's been rescheduled for Thursday, March 4th at 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 4 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 p.m. UTC. Got quite a few questions when that didn't end up happening, so wanted to pass that along. The other thing that I'm sure I'll get asked about today is Gordon Johnson and Gene Munster's appearance on CNBC today. They had a little mini bull bear debate. Gene was very bullish, especially on full self-driving towards the end of this year. Gordon, of course, was very bearish. He brought up a few things, so I'll just address those quickly. All things that we have talked about. So he brought up price cuts, said Tesla's cut prices 14 times this year. Not sure exactly where that number is coming from. I assume he's counting every individual country there, which, you know, probably not the best way to look at it. You probably want to look at the average. And of course, as we talked about with the price changes in Europe, a lot of those were just to bring prices back in line with the shift between the euro and the US dollar. He, of course, suggested that means there's a demand problem. We've talked plenty about that. He He mentioned the recent news with J.D. Power and Consumer Reports ranking Tesla low in their, you know, quality or reliability rankings, and of course the Edmunds range test, where Edmunds had said that all Tesla vehicles they had tested fell below the EPA estimated range. So again, all topics that I feel like we've addressed. I know people say just don't even talk about Gordon. He does actually raise points pretty well, I think. It's just the manner in which they're raised. They're missing context. Like 14 price changes sounds bad if you don't really realize all that stuff. So for those newer to maybe the Tesla space, I do think it's helpful to at least briefly address them. The other quick thing here that you may see a little bit of chatter about today is a new note from Morgan Stanley. So just letting people know, it was nothing too intensive, only about a page long note, addressing the question of, is Tesla the iPhone or BlackBerry of EVs? They've kept their $880 price target, no change there. And I don't think they really answered the question, but they do say the question triggers a number of thoughts. The first one being, quote, "We believe the risk of being BlackBerried is one of the key drivers of Tesla's increased vertical integration into capabilities such as battery manufacturing and other key enabling technologies," end quote. I would say I strongly disagree with that line of thought. Tesla's not doing those things to avoid being BlackBerry. They're doing those things because those are the things they need to do to create the best future. It's not about trying to protect their moats or anything like that, or trying to differentiate themselves, which that Morgan Stanley comment would kind of imply. There's like a degree of reactivity there, and that's just not how I see it at all. Tesla's being extremely proactive rather than reactive. Lastly, today we'll wrap up with just a little bit of news on SpaceX. So as we've been talking about, Starship serial number 10, that test flight may be happening this week, potentially as early as today. That has now moved to no earlier than Wednesday, March 3rd. Additionally, SpaceX is also targeting a launch of 60 more Starlink satellites this week. That has been moved now to Tuesday, March 2nd at 7:53 p.m. Eastern Time, which would actually be 12:53 a.m. on Wednesday, March 3rd, UTC. So we'll keep an eye on both of those, but that will wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, March 2nd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.